What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
Greetings, esteemed colleagues. This week's podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Optometry Times.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Defocus podcast. And this week, we are going deep down into ocular surface disease. Daryl, welcome to the podcast with me this week. I know you're always having a great time when we talk about dry eye.
Oh, yes. I love dry eye. I actually dream about it every single night.
It sounds like nightmares. But we have a guest here who probably really does dream about dry eye every night. This is Dr. Richard Adler. He's an ophthalmologist practicing in Maryland with Belcara Health, and it's multidisciplinary practice with both dermatology and ophthalmology. Dr. Adler, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, absolutely. I'm happy to do this with you guys. I do dream about dry eye. It's true. Unlike most nice. Doctors, they're not nightmares. So it's fascinating. The topic today hopefully can allow people to feel a lot better about dry eye disease, a little more excited about it, and maybe have some happy dreams. I'm part of an interesting practice in Baltimore, Maryland. It's called Belcara Health. And what we've done is integrate multiple specialties, including ophthalmology, dermatology, plastic surgery. And it's allowed for a more comprehensive approach to even eye care and is a great fit for IPL. My background is I'm from the Baltimore area. I did all my training at the Wilmer Eye Institute and a fellowship in cornea as well from Wilmer. I've been in private practice now for about 15 years, but still keep a faculty position at Johns Hopkins at Wilmer. I've been delighted to be able to incorporate IPL into my practice, which is mostly a general ophthalmology practice. And as such, of course, I see tons of dry eye disease.
So IPL stands for intense pulse light, and it really started as a dermatology procedure for ocular rosacea or even just facial rosacea. Would you mind kind of giving us that full background of how IPL became a treatment for dry eye?
Yeah, absolutely. Personally, I've been using IPL for dry eye since about 2010, but its history in the use of facial rosacea extends much further back in time. It's been used for decades and decades very successfully for the treatment of facial rosacea. And as eye care professionals, one thing we've all have noticed is that facial rosacea oftentimes is associated with ocular rosacea. In fact, some studies propose about an 86% correlation between the two. And its success in dermatology led some thought leaders, most notably Rolando Toyos, to take note of the possibility of using IPL successfully not only for facial rosacea, but for ocular rosacea. And incidentally, as it turns out, the anecdote at least goes that patients getting treated for their facial rosacea started to note some improvement in their dry eye symptoms. And that really was kind of the start of all this, the nidus, the interest, the curiosity for seeing whether or not we could actually translated success in dermatology and facial rosacea to a success in eye care with ocular rosacea, which as we know has a tight correlation with dry eye disease.
So Dr. Adler, is it safe to say that the ideal patient for someone for this type of treatment is someone that you can actually see visible signs of rosacea?
Well, yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. I would certainly say that signs of ocular rosacea are sufficient for treatment, but I'd like to certainly qualify that by saying it's not necessary. And I think that's a really important point because we see a lot of folks with dry eye disease who don't have robust or obvious lid disease. And in fact, most people probably don't. So while I can say quite confidently that the presence of ocular rosacea certainly is sufficient to indicate treatment, it's not necessary. And I've often said the best candidate for an IPL treatment is a patient who has dry eye and skin around their eye. That's really all you need. It's not absolutely necessary to have visible rosacea, even though that's certainly part of the mechanism of action, but not the only.
What happened to doxycycline? I mean, is that used anymore? What are your thoughts in regards to that treatment?
Yeah, I still use it, but, you know, doxycycline, of course, has value potentially in managing active rosacea. But, you know, a lot of folks aren't interested necessarily in chronically taking an oral medication, particularly one that has had some side effects. And efficacy itself is not perfect. And remember, as perhaps we can chat a little bit during this conversation, IPL doesn't only work by reducing rosacea. There are multiple other mechanisms of actions that seem to be in play here. So while, yes, we have successfully used doxycycline to treat forms of rosacea, IPL provides a much broader approach to the treatment and one that does not require any kind of drugs, avoids drug side effects, avoids drops. So for folks looking for a way to really kind of harness the natural processes around their eye without obligating themselves to use of chronic medications, IPL is very well suited.
So let's dive deep into that. Like, what is happening in intense pulse light procedure? I know it's a pulse of light about 500 to 800 nanometers in wavelength, and it's actually coagulating the blood vessels and the telangiectatic vessels, and maybe even killing some bacterial flora as well?
Yeah. What's fascinating is that we've really started to develop a much broader understanding of how IPL works, and there truly seems to be a number of mechanisms of actions in play. So just to summarize some of the proposed theories by which IPL works, which in many cases have been substantiated by really good scientific study, include the following. Number one, we do know that the heat energy raises the temperature of the blood vessels high enough to coagulate them, decreasing the leakiness and the introduction of inflammatory mediators. It's possible that the heat of the light can actually soften the meibum and may improve expressibility of the glands. Three, we've seen some indication that IPL can actually increase the production of anti-inflammatory molecules and decrease the production of inflammatory ones. Furthermore, we've seen specifically that IPL might modulate MMP9 levels, decreasing MMP9 levels, which have been very problematic. A fourth potential mechanism of action is its activity against Demodex. Demodex, of course, is the mite that tends to inhabit the eyelashes, which can promote all sorts of inflammatory reactions. And IPL seems to interact with the exoskeleton, the pigment of the exoskeleton of the Demodex. And finally, there's some indication that IPL may actually work at an intracellular level, very complex interaction. Actions in the mitochondria cells, where it can actually improve, for example, the ATP production, leading to improved collagen synthesis, and maybe even in some cases a decrease in free radical production. So we see there's multiple potential mechanisms of action for IPL, many of which do not require obvious lid disease to work, and that's really a critical point. So as we have come to understand dry eye as an inflammatory condition, this very comprehensive multiple strategy approach to dry eye disease is very notable in IPL.
Dr. Adler, you mentioned that it may soften the meibum. Do you manually express the meibomian glands after the procedure, or do a lipoflow procedure, or what is your take on that?
That probably is one of the more controversial mechanisms of actions. And the reason I say that is the technology has come such a long way that the actual exposure to heat is short, and that's a nice thing. That's why it's so painless. This is a painless procedure. So the actual heating of the skin quite possibly might not be enough to actually warm the meibum. It's definitely hot enough to coagulate the blood vessels, because remember, we're targeting the oxyhemoglobin in there. But probably it's not hot enough to actually melt the meibum, which is actually a good thing, in my opinion. This really demonstrates, again, the fact that we are not dependent necessarily on obvious lid disease. And in my opinion, we are not dependent on expressing the glands afterwards. In my practice, I do express the glands afterwards only for diagnostic purposes. I like to monitor from treatment to treatment the improvement in the consistency of the meibum. I do not do lid gland expression for therapeutic purposes, however, because again, in my opinion, IPL is working by so many other mechanisms of actions that its direct immediate effect on meibum is not the main advantage by which it works. But again, it's important to express just to monitor progress and document improvement along the way.
So Dr. Adler, say I have the ideal patient that's sitting in my chair. What expectations should I give them in regards to the overall treatment? Let's talk a little bit about the pre-op, the post-op, how long this procedure takes. If you could just give us a good overview so we can educate our patients on what they're actually getting into.
Absolutely. You know, one of the beautiful things about this procedure is it's very easy. Doctors are reluctant to incorporate too many new technologies into their dry eye processes because, frankly, they already feel dry eye takes too much time. And that's one of the challenges with dry eye disease. But fortunately, IPL fits into both a doctor's schedule and a patient's schedule very easy. What do I mean by that? There's very minimal time associated with it. I personally perform all my procedures. An average treatment takes 5 to 10 minutes. Tops. That's wonderful for a busy doctor's schedule, and it's also wonderful for a patient's schedule. These are folks who might want to come in on a busy day, stop by during lunch, and get their treatment. They're in the office literally getting treated for no more than 10 minutes. There's no downtime or restrictions afterward other than, of course, avoiding direct sun exposure right after their treatment. So folks can really pick up where they left off in their day. It's very easy to do.
And what about the costs?
Well, so, you know, this of course comes up. And again, this is a good and bad thing. But this is not covered by insurance. And that's something that I do bring up with the patients right away. And they need to understand that, just like many dry eye devices are not. And again, most of the time, I am having this discussion with patients who have tried other therapies and have failed. So these are folks who've come from doctor to doctor or who have tried multiple other therapies and are frustrated. And they're really willing to do what it takes to feel better. So in most cases at this time, the idea of a non-covered procedure is not very threatening. But you're correct. It's not covered by insurance. And I usually tell patients up front, look, this technology does not even have a CPT code yet. So it's not billable through insurance. But in my practice, we have find ways to make it affordable. I think on average, about 4 treatments are required. The treatments are usually separated by about 1 month each. And patients have the option of paying per procedure, or in my practice, we've arranged package formulas where they can buy a package of 4 and get a 5th one free if they need it, or a package with a reduced total cost. But on average, and it varies from region to region, on average, these treatments run about $300 per treatment. And in my experience, many patients are willing to spend that money at this point, particularly if they've been frustrated by failed therapies in the past. And again, one of the benefits of this is that they'll potentially be spending less money, for example, by using less artificial tears. So there are some cost savings there as well. But again, I have found that for many patients who are really suffering and whose quality of life is being negatively impacted by a dry eye disease, they're more than willing to invest in a better quality of life.
What, in your experience, has been the success rate for patients? I mean, how much symptom relief is your average patient really getting?
It varies. I've probably treated, goodness, since 2010, between 500 and 600 folks with dry eye disease. People come in with all sorts of presenting symptoms. Some people are having more discomfort-related symptoms, burning, dryness, grittiness. Others are having more visual complaints, like blurry vision, while others are complaining that they can't wear the contact lens well. So the gauge by which we measure success is sort of an interesting question. How do you define success in a dry eye treatment? For me, the definition of success is, are patients symptoms improving? Is their quality of life improving? That's what's most important. I can tell you that I have never had a patient look back at me and say this treatment has done nothing for me. Having said that, there, of course, are varying degrees of success, as there is with any medical treatment. That's nothing unusual. But everybody has noticed some improvement, whether it's visual or whether it's less dependency on drops, improved contact lens tolerance. It's really been remarkable to me to see the benefit. Now, some people don't notice it at first. It might take the completion of all the treatments, while others seem to notice some benefit even after one treatment. So there's definitely some variability there. But the improvement in some type of symptomatologies is really almost ubiquitous amongst the patient population that I've treated with it. And that's been really exciting to see. That's very unusual. There are plenty of folks who still, I'll be honest with you, there are plenty of folks who still need management for their dry eye disease. It's certainly not a complete cure, but that's really not our goal in dry eye. I mean, we can't cure this disease. We're looking for ways to make people more comfortable with their disease. And that's really what we've been able to do successfully with IPL.
If a doctor was looking at bringing this equipment and technology into their practice, what is their investment besides the actual technology itself? Is there certain equipment that you have to have in the office to support it as well?
Really very little. And that's another thing. There's no click fee. There's no disposable cost. None of that. And that's awesome. It really sets IPL technology apart from others. When you're considering what device should I look into, a lot of times it's those accessories, disposables, and the click fees that can make the price onerous for some practices. So the only costs associated with this, other than the actual device, are a one-time, I use metal corneal shields, which are very affordable, very inexpensive to protect the eye. And I use a little aloe gel during the procedure. That's it. That's really it, which is remarkable. Once you actually have this machine, you're not looking at any additional costs.
So that's just fantastic as far as a practice builder. Have patients that are experiencing symptom relief. Your in-pocket cost, of course, besides investing in the technology, isn't all that high. And like you said, this is not a laser. It is visible or infrared spectrum of light. So the state laws, of course, vary by state to state, but it is potentially possible that this is something that OD-MD practice could both incorporate, or maybe even optometry.
Absolutely. It is. That's an aspect of this that does not get enough attention, to be honest with you. In Maryland, honestly, the state law is a little gray, and it's a little bit hard to interpret. Very clear about lasers, but not as clear about lights. But I've seen it work both ways. I have seen optometric practices in Maryland, in the Maryland area, effectively use this treatment on their own and develop a strong practice around it. I have personally had success with a co-management approach to it, which is very unique. I mean, in dry eye disease, the idea of co-management is unheard of. And because a lot of times, why would an optometrist want to send a patient to an ophthalmologist for dry eye disease? It's just unnecessary in most cases. But in some states, or if you have an optometrist who just is not comfortable using a device and would rather send this out in a co-manager approach, it worked great. I did that for years with a practice in my area, whereby they would do some of the pre-procedure testing. They would do myography, some other dry eye metrics, send it to me along with the patient. I would treat them, and they'd see the patients maybe once during the treatment intervals, and then then patient would return to them afterwards. And it was a very effective symbiotic relationship. And it does create novel opportunities for co-management between ophthalmology and optometry. Very true.
Dr. Adler, thank you so much for hanging out with Jennifer and I today. We greatly appreciate all the knowledge that you bestowed upon us today. IPL technology seems like the future. It seems very promising. And I look forward to more breakthroughs and information about IPL technology. Thank you again, Dr. Adler.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.